part of the conversation. Send us a WhatsApp message on +27 73 470 3520 or call us at +27 12 001 7679. Let your voice be heard. Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. From broadcast to baptism.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Thursday edition of Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media. It is the final and second hour of the show. Some might even like to call it the home stretch hour. I had someone who was talking to me the other day saying it is the home stretch hour, and I was like, yeah, maybe that's what we should call this last hour, né? Yeah, just a few ideas there coming through. But anyways, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate you. It is Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media. Every single Thursday, this feature is becoming quite very, very important for this show and for this radio station as well. And I really love it. Really love it, because that's where we bring you some of the leading minds and leading people across the African continent. We call this a Shapeshifter Thursday, and our shapeshifter today is Mpho Mangwela, who is, of course, HRBP at Public Investment Corporation, okay, with experience spanning over several years, with a robust skill set that includes HRIS, yes, HR policies, as well as employee relations, negotiations, and employee engagement, and a whole lot more. And is joining us this evening as our shapeshifter. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Thapelo.
Ah, how are you?
I'm all right, and how are you?
Fantastic. How's the year been for you? We are going towards the end of the year.
Yeah, no, I think it's almost finished. It has been a very interesting year.
Yeah.
It has been a long year, I must say.
Okay.
hectic at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, one is actually looking forward to the end of the year. So that one can take a breather.
Yeah, I'm sure fatigue has started setting in. I've had a few people saying we are tired now.
Like, no, certainly. Yeah. I mean, I've also experienced a few issues here and there,
yes,
that have emanated through him and sicknesses.
Oh, like, my
I realize that, yeah.
Yeah,
that
it's time to rest.
Yeah.
But generally, the year has been good.
Yeah, no, generally, the year has been good.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't complain. Yeah.
Yes.
I thank the Lord that, you know, he has kept us this far.
Until this far, eh? Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you joining us this evening. Every single Thursday, we do this thing called Shapeshift. And really, this is where we speak to leading minds like yourself. And we look at the entire African continent for two reasons, basically. And one is that to inspire young people as well, particularly the black young people, to say it is possible, you know. As you grow up, as you might be facing challenges, but there are other fellow black people, right, that have done it before you. And we take God and give him all the glory for that, because that's really, really important, you know. So that's why we do it. But there are also young people that see you that might not necessarily have the opportunity to come to you or even ask you or chat to you, you know, because maybe, you know, time and space and all that doesn't allow. And so we bring people like yourselves into the space, but we really appreciate your time. Let's start here. Mpho, where were you born?
I was born in the East Rand.
East Rand?
Particularly Katlehong.
Okay, wow.
You know that area, yeah. That's where I was born. That was where I was actually brought up.
Okay.
So I think I've spent probably over, maybe over 20 years in the same similar area, yeah. So that's where I come from, essentially.
Oh, okay. All right. And how was K1? I mean, I read a book. I don't know if you know, there's a gentleman called Skim GP or something like that. I think it's one of the most famous people that came out of K1 back in the days.
Yes. you know, K1 has been lovely. I know about Skim GP.
Okay.
I mean, I think interesting things have happened there. I mean, you would remember those riots that happened
in
the 90s and all that, yeah.
Exactly.
And obviously, one was young at the time. I remember at some stage, you know, my mother having to take me away because, you know, it was so bad at that time. So I think there are, you know, nice positive things and other not so positive things happened there.
Not
I think that's a place that I'm proud of. You know, one has actually learned a lot there.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, lovely. Yeah. And so let's go back then there to the point that you're making, that, you know, your parents were there or your mother was there to help you navigate that particular space. What were some of the challenges that you could remember as a young person growing up at K1?
Yeah, I mean, Katlehong, I think being one of the townships in South Africa, it's probably, when you look at it, I mean, with other townships around it, including probably Tembisa, maybe the third largest in the entire world. Yeah, I mean, similar challenges that you can find in a lot of townships. Mm. So I think it was the issues of, I mean, we've seen a lot of young people when they complete their studies or their matric or grade 12, having challenges with actually studying further, purely because of, you know, lack of, you know, financing or lack of funds. And what you've also seen, I mean, is not having a lot of, you know, infrastructure or call it relevant centers where young people could actually sort of go and obtain or acquire important information. I mean, the likes of libraries and all that. Sure. I mean, there were a couple of those that are, you know, that were very few.
Yeah.
So if you find yourself living away or very far from one of those, it becomes a challenge, you know, for you to go there to access information and so forth. Yeah. And also having a number of, you know, limited, you know, medical centers. I mean, they were there, but I mean, very, very few. So to be able to access those, you know, medical services, you know, one would actually make a serious journey to go there. I think those are some of the serious, some of the few challenges that one sort of experienced growing up. Yeah.
Yeah. And how did you navigate those?
Yeah. Obviously, I mean, you know, maybe from an education point of view, you sort of grow up and you have a dream within you, and, you know, the dream is you want to be successful. Yes. You actually want to do better than probably maybe your parents, maybe, you know, do better than, you know, most of the people that, you know, you live around. Mm. I think just that fire within one, it sort of pushes one to, you know, go beyond what you have seen, go beyond, you know, the borders and push yourself and tell yourself that, you know, these are the challenges, I can see them, but you will try and actually find more information, find ways to actually get out of the situation that, that you're in. I think for me, more than anything, it is the dream, it is the fire that's within my one that actually pushed me to sort of navigate around, you know, those challenges. Yeah. Mm. I mean, I always had this thing that I'm going to make, you know, my life better than what it is at that time.
Yeah. Lovely, lovely. And would you say parents played a role in helping you to see that? Because my sense is that, you know, growing up as a young person, you need hope. You need someone who's going to say you can do it. Mm-hmm. Despite that, you know, you might have failed a subject here and there and to be discouraged and feel like, you know what, this schooling thing is not for me. But when someone says, no, you can do it, and often at times it's our parents.
You know, certainly, I mean, I'm one who received, you know, support, you know, assistance from the parent. I mean, I was brought up by a single mother. I mean, from time to time, when she has the time, she would obviously assist me with the schoolwork. She always, I mean, emphasized the fact that, you know, she didn't have opportunities like, you know, the ones that I have. And always, I mean, encouraged me to say, I must actually grab those opportunities and, you know, make something out of them. And she can also assist me with, I mean, the little that she has.
Yeah.
And I guess, I mean, hearing those words, you know, all the time, you know, one has that thing that, you know, I cannot disappoint her. And certainly, I mean, I also want to, you know, get out of that situation. I just need to push against all odds.
Sure. And primary, how was it?
Primary was okay. I mean, I attended a primary school called Die Brein.
Okay.
Primary school, it might sound as if, you know, it's not a township
school, like, but it was actually
it was certainly a township primary school. So that's where primary schooling, right from grade 1 up until grade 7. And I must say, it actually really you know, went well.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there were obviously a few years where, you know, schooling was actually disturbed, as I indicated earlier, when we had some riots, you know, around Katlehong. Yeah. But I mean, overall, it actually went well. And yeah, I must say that, you know, God was able to help one to, you know, sort of receive good grades, you know, during the primary schooling days.
Yeah. And what would you say was your one naughtiest thing? You know, everyone, when they thought of this, they're like, nah, he did it. No one else.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember, I think it was in grade probably 5 or 6.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was actually one of those guys who would used to, who loved to sort of laugh a lot.
Okay.
And when I laugh, I like make other people to laugh.
Okay.
And that would just make the entire class to laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chaos. So I would really get into trouble for that because, you know, when the teacher would come in and then I would quickly be quiet and then the teacher would ask, I mean, you know, what's happening here?
Yeah.
You know, who's actually making jokes in the class? And everybody would actually point at me, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember just that one year, you know, I ended up in, you know, the principal's office.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And then luckily, I mean, there are people that came from, you know, the department to visit the principal. And I mean, I stayed there outside his office and he even forgot about me. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Lovely. Okay, yeah. That's interesting. So would you say you've got a little bit of, you know, comedian joking, Yana? People who love laughing, they often throw around jokes a bit.
I think I had growing up.
Yeah.
Don't ask me what happened to me. I've since now become, you know, people say I'm very serious.
Yeah.
It's so difficult, you know, for them to approach me and all that. And I'll be like, no.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't have that anymore.
Oh, okay. I would have thought, you must pursue comedy as well and add it in the mix of things. And high school, was it still in the same area?
No, high school is not in the same area. And luckily, I mean, my mother was able to take me to a school in Germiston, especially in Lambton.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's where I actually did my high schooling.
Okay.
And I mean, as I said to you, you know, it was obviously her efforts trying to, you know, get me better, you know, schooling.
Yeah.
And ensuring that, I mean, I sort of receive better opportunities, you know, compared to, you know, to her and probably other kids, you know, in the neighborhood. Yeah. So that's where I actually attended my schooling.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was in Germiston. Yeah.
Okay. So moving from, I suppose, you know, a school in the location or a lokshin, as we call it, perhaps to a more better, you know, more resourced and all that. I mean, it's a relative, you know, question and all that type of a thing. But but that full spectrum, how would you say that has contributed to who you are today?
Yeah, no, it really helped. I once again, I mean, I thank the Lord that He provided her with I think the strength to be able to go that route. I mean, and I remember there were a few instances where, I mean, schools like, because K1, which is, you know, Katlehong High School, would have been, you know, one school that's closer to my house, that, you know, where one would have actually attended.
Mm.
But you could see that, you know, there would be disruption of schooling, you know, here and there, and probably other schools around the neighborhood.
Mm.
And I guess, I mean, getting an opportunity to go and do my high school somewhere really helped.
Yeah.
Because one was able to sort of focus on their schooling and be able to learn, and you know, which is, you know, something important. Yeah, and yeah, I guess that really helped. And I mean, you know, sometimes how things, you know, they could be, or how things were in the township. I mean, you know, those days. Yeah.
Yeah, it was tough, very, very tough. Yeah. And I know. And then you decided to go into human resources at UJ. What was it like? Let's start here. Going to university, UJ. I know we produce quite a bit of graduates in the different universities in South Africa, but statistically we're still below par. So in other words, going to university isn't itself a privilege of sort.
No, certainly. It is a privilege. And maybe before I even get there, so I sort of had a gap of some sort after completing my studies.
Yeah.
And it was due to, obviously, you know, finance issues.
Yes.
The mother couldn't, you know, assist in terms of me studying further or paying for my tuition, studying further. Yeah. And as I said, I mean, one then tried to find employment. And yeah, as you know how it is in our country. Yeah, it was really, really difficult to find employment. So I found myself being at home, I think, for about 2.5 years.
Sure.
Yeah, without, you know, doing anything. So I was basically economically inactive, you know, for that time. Trying to apply for bursaries and all that. And again, I guess, I mean, not getting very good grades did not even help. It did not help at all. So fortunately, I mean, I was able to secure some temporary job just towards the end of year three while I was at home. And then I applied, you know, for this NSFAS, you know, financial aid scheme. You know, fortunately, I mean, I was able to, you know, to get, you know, funding from them. So I think that's when then I was able to then go back to tertiary and further my studies. And I mean, HR was really not my first choice. HR was not my first choice. So I wanted to pursue electrical engineering or studies in IT or even even LLB. Unfortunately, I mean, I could not qualify for any of those. I think that's what happened. And obviously, I mean, while I was going to these different institutions, then I then came across, you know, HR. Sort of got some more information about it. And I thought to myself, all right, let me really look into this and try this, because it seemed interesting. I mean, all I knew about HR then was that, I mean, they hire and fire people.
That's all. Yeah, that's what all of us think
That's what I knew at the time. I didn't know there is so much that one can actually do in HR. I mean, it's one discipline as well that sort of plays a huge role in corporate or in big corporates. Got some information around it, and I realized, okay, let me pursue this maybe for my first year. Because I mean, I really did not want to now sit at home again. That would have been, you know, year number four sitting at home. And I thought, let me actually do this for the first year and then see how it goes. And I must tell you, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it in the first year. I mean, there was a bit of labor law related there, and I thought, okay, it still talks somehow to the LLB that I wanted to do law. There was a bit of, you know, statistical research or business research. And I thought to myself, okay, I found that to be interesting. And then that's how I sort of continued with the qualification. And I went all the way and completed it. And and I did not even regret it after having completed the qualification. So that's how I actually got into HR. I mean, it was not something that I had planned to go into that I sort of even knew much about it.
So the proverbial buck bit you in a way, and you never look back. So you're one of the few people in life where you would say this career found you.
I think so. I think it found me. And I mean, I did not resist when it found me. I just said, okay, accepted. I'm going to go with it.
Love it, love it. And I know you've done quite a bit of advanced studies in the HR space as well. And I also was told, you know, into the MBA. How did you find the MBA route?
Yeah, so I mean, I then when I finished at UJ, then I went to so obviously, I mean, after UJ, I was fortunate to sort of get an opportunity to do some graduate program, which I completed successfully, and then immediately after that program, I was able to find permanent employment. What I did was then, as soon as I started working and earning a salary, then I thought to myself, I mean, what I've done at UJ is certainly not enough. Had to then further my studies. And I mean, that was also an encouragement from the mother to say, you know what, you need to study further. What you've attained at UJ, it's not enough. So I was able to actually do 2-3 more degrees while studying. And then everything went well there. And I thank the Lord that I was able to sort of attain all those qualifications. And then in terms of the MBA, yes, I thought, let me pursue this as well. which I pursued and completed my coursework.
Yeah.
And the only thing that's outstanding there, it's the research.
The research. Okay.
Yeah, it's not completed.
Yeah.
I still need to do my research.
Yeah.
You know, for me to be able to complete it. Yeah.
Okay.
So I think those qualifications I've done, very insightful, educational, and especially the MBA opens up one's mind.
Definitely.
To understand how corporates operate. So you sort of look at all the segments, all the disciplines in the corporate, how you sort of bring those together, you know, for an organization to be able to deliver on its strategic objectives at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, I would encourage anybody to actually look into studying, you know, that or an MBA or call it a postgraduate diploma in business administration. It's a very, very, very valuable qualification to sort of have. I mean, it's actually a sought after qualification.
I was about to say that it also comes with that, but challenges. Apparently, it's hard.
It's hard. It's hard. I mean, I can tell you, I think about two or so modules. I really struggle with them.
Yeah.
And I guess, I mean, one of those being a portfolio investment management module.
Sure.
If I was not in the space that I'm working in, I would probably have struggled.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I mean, I had a few guys who work in the space who were able to sort of assist and support me for me to be able to sort of complete that module. It's not an easy qualification.
Yeah,
I can tell you.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's not a cheap qualification.
That takes you back almost cheap. ₹500,000, right?
Yeah, it's close to that. That's how much one would spend on the qualification.
Imagine, just crazy.
Yeah. But I mean, the learning that one gets from it, the value is so great that I can't even, you know, measure that. And I mean, looking at, you know, management or general management, senior management roles, and all the way to executive management. This, you know, if you've got a qualification like that, it sort of, you know, opens doors for you. That's what I can tell you.
It definitely does. I mean, I was looking at, you know, looking at your varied then, you know, sectors, experience that you've went to, Times Media, Alexander also in there, you went into mining. That career trajectory, if you were to sum it up, how would you sum it up? What are some of the key highlights?
I'm grateful that I got those opportunities. I mean, so because I had a chance to sort of work in different sectors or industries of our economy. So I think for me, I would sum it up by saying, you know, I think an HR professional in that space really needs to also have some serious business acumen. That's very important. If you want to be able to add value, if you want to be able to be impactful in your space as an HR professional, you know, or a human capital professional, you really need to understand the business that you operate in. You really need to have that business acumen, as I indicated, so that, I mean, you understand exactly what the business needs to deliver on. And then, I mean, when you understand all those, your interventions, your solutions as an HR professional, they are sort of really aligned to what the business wants to achieve.
Yeah.
And I mean, you don't frustrate the business, you don't pull in a different direction.
Yeah.
And I mean, for me, an HR profession, gone are the days where HR is actually an admin function.
Yeah.
HR sits, you know, at the table as well and makes the decision with the business. So I think for me, how would I sum it up, the whole trajectory is ensuring that I understand all the businesses that I've actually worked for and add value, you know, according to how they want to sort of achieve and deliver on their strategy.
Yeah. And you're quite right. I mean, without necessarily belaboring the point, how HR has moved from being a support function to really being a strategic partner. And I suppose the terms like human resource business partner came into the fore now instead of just human resource. When did that start? I mean, I'm just thinking to myself, and again, I'm not in the HR space, you would know better than me, but obviously there was a shift somewhere where now HR became a business partner.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I think it was, if my memory still serves me right, it was around the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah, when that shift happened.
Yeah.
So there is this HR guru by the name of David Ulrich.
Yeah.
That has actually came up with this model that's called HR business partnering.
Okay.
And this model really talks to, you know, HR being a strategic partner, as you've rightfully indicated.
Yeah.
Being an advocate on employee issues and also being a change agent, I mean, which are for me very, very key things.
Mm.
And I think this guru has actually seen how HR, if properly implemented, if HR professionals develop this skill of business acumen, they can really sort of make an impact within you know, the spaces that they operate in.
There are young people who are now getting into this space, and some are even pursuing a career in this space. What would you say is the most important thing? Be strategic. Know that, you know, as you get into this space, no longer about just hiring and firing. It's about bringing value to the table.
Yeah, I think my advice would be more than, I think, the part of, you know, talent acquisition or even doing the administration. There are a lot of, call it, areas that one could follow within HR or human capital.
Yeah.
I mean, organizations now are looking for people that are experienced, are skilled when it comes to HRIS, that would be information system. And I mean, you would agree with me, information system, it's very important in this day and age.
Yeah.
I mean, even if one studies, you know, data science, that will still be relevant in a sense that any organization, you know, for them to make an informed decision, they obviously need data.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very important. So if one can sort of go into that space and master that space, they should be able to, I think, do well in also in HR.
Yeah.
I mean, there's also an area around organizational development, organizational design, which also plays a very key part for organizations. So this is where, you know, when organizations want to sort of build a new strategy or they want to sort of build a new structure within the organization, expect, like, you know, organizational effectiveness specialists, they're able to sort of advise the business accordingly, you know, to ensure that, I mean, the structure, the strategy, both, I mean, they are in alignment.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's something that the organization is able to sort of deliver on.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a space called where one can do learning and development. So this is really in and around assisting the organization in training and developing the talent that the organization has. And I mean, as you would know, the most important asset that organizations have is actually their human resources or the talent. So you need to ensure that continuously you are able to sort of train, retrain that talent. And I mean, there's also employee relations. So this really talks about ensuring that there is a good harmonious relationship between, you know, management and staff,
we
call it labor. So if one sort of enhances their skills, their knowledge in that regard, they can always be able to be the link between between the two and ensure that there is, you know, a harmonious relationship. And I mean, I'm just mentioning just a few areas there.
Definitely.
Yeah, but I can tell you, I mean, there's a lot that one can do in the HR space.
Yeah,
that is really impactful.
Yeah.
On organizations. Yeah, and one can also run their own business, offering, you know, HR related services or human capital related service. So one doesn't necessarily only need to work for an organization to be able to showcase their skills in human capital. I just thought, let me also point out that.
So in short, you just don't, you guys don't just sit in the office and wait to hire and fire. There's a whole lot more that you guys do.
Yeah. I mean, that's, like I said earlier on, that's what I thought HR is about. When I actually acquired more information, I realized there's actually more that one can do in the HR space.
I mean, I'm now thinking about, I don't know whether it sits in the industrial psychology part of HR or the body of HR. Right, the issue of since COVID, mental health of employees has been brought to the fore. And it used to be something, I suppose, in the obscurity where companies were not necessarily spending time, or if they were spending time, I remember this one big organization where, you know, it was contracted to most, and I think it was in the mining space quite a bit. And I think as employees, we never used to really use them, because you call them, you sit on the phone with them, and you know, you tell them your problems, blah, blah, blah. But I think those were attempts. But at the time, I don't think it was at the forefront of organizations to speak about employee mental health and all those sort of stuff. Do you grapple, deal with those type of things on an everyday basis? I'm sure your strategies also includes those as well.
Yeah, no, certainly. I mean, that's also another space that one could go into, which is really about employee well-being or employee wellness.
Yeah.
And this is really about ensuring that the talent that you have is able to operate or perform optimally
yeah.
without any hindrances that touch on their well-being. So, you know, organizations have contracted having service providers that assist with those employee assistance program or wellness programs.
Yeah.
So in essence, I mean, in that space, it's really working with those external service providers to assist, obviously, with employee issues on the side. I mean, because what happens is that those service providers would have qualified people, counselors, they would have, doctors that are able to sort of, do consultation with the staff. And then obviously, when we have got the reports from those service providers, we are able to sort of understand what are the issues and see how best within we support our staff. And also having that reasonable accommodation if that needs to be in place.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you are right. Certainly, I mean, we had a lot of those issues during COVID, especially, in instances where people could not cope now having been to be in the same space, the whole day, the whole week, or for weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was sort of a new thing, and they could not cope with it. And I mean, you find that other people, they sort of live or stay alone, for them coming to the office, it sort of helps their well-being because they get to interact with other people. As you know, human beings are social beings, but immediately when one is sitting alone, then it becomes a problem. So I think then where employee wellness or well-being became a very topical thing, became a very big thing at that time, and I think organizations that had the proper infrastructure at that time to sort of support their employees, I think they did very well there.
Yeah.
And that assisted in terms of, avoiding, eliminating any, issues of burnout or employees, breaking down and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, fantastic.
Yeah. So I think that's also another interesting space.
Yeah, it is.
And it's something that also needs to be done intentionally.
Yeah.
Organizations need to have those programs in place to sort of support their staff.
Yeah.
And I think other people only know wellness as, I think, only that part where one is not well physically. And wellness sort of goes beyond that because we also talk about financial wellness there.
Yeah.
We talk about, all other kinds of wellness. Yeah. So I think that's also an important space that needs to be taken care of.
Where is the world of HR going? I know you mentioned information systems and data, becoming very important for key decision making as well to inform how we operate, how we strategically position ourselves, and that calls for a key role of HR as well. But 10 years from now, 20 years from now, where do you see HR and some of the trends coming up?
Yeah, so I think with the introduction of AI, we're going into 4IR. So you can see a whole lot of routine administrative, functions, they sort of get to be eliminated with time. Things that can be done by, you know, robots and all that. Yeah. Those things, I think, get to be eliminated. So what I'm seeing in HR, I think one of the things is really, I mean, people that are skilled in terms of to work with data. I think this is where we're going in the future. And what the other thing, or where HR again is sort of going, is really HR being a true strategic business partner. I think, as we said, just moving away from being a support function, moving away from, you know, just doing the admin. HR is then now going to be sitting around the table, as I indicated earlier on, and also making decisions with the organization. That's basically ensuring that HR professionals are actually able to work with technology. You know, I remember somebody saying that, you know, technology is not here to take people's jobs, but obviously if you're not going to be able to work with it, it will certainly take your job.
So it is
a case of also being able to do what we call machine learning, and also automating what we can automate within HR, you know, to ensure that, I mean, we are sort of at the same level with the other disciplines. So I think the issue of, you know, routine things, administrative functions, that's going to be something of the past, because that will obviously be taken by I think automation.
I think next time you have this interview, it will be a robot interviewing.
Certainly.
that's coming up. And talking about it, just as I divert, the other day, you know, these random calls we get from these call centers and whatever the case might be, one has been calling me, I think, 3 times now, and I've noted, because the first time I responded to it, I couldn't tell that it was actually automated, a robot. So I responded. When it said hello, I responded, and then it asked, how are you? I said, I'm fine. And after about 3 or 4 seconds, then someone picked up, and I could recognize that the voice is different now. Okay, so I dropped the call. Then the second one came. The third time, when the same number called me, I kept quiet. So it said hello, and then I kept quiet.
Yeah.
And after a few seconds, said, "How are you?" I was like, this is a robot, because I did not respond.
It's automated. And I mean, what you see in the space is that obviously there's a lot of research that is done. A lot of studying of human behavior. I think the guys in that space, they sort of now understand that they could actually save a certain amount of time for the agents by just having that particular automated machine speaking to you. I think it's about, you know, 5 to 10 seconds or so that you could use with that machine. And I mean, if you add up that time, it might seem very little, but it's actually a lot.
You
put together that in a day and in a period of a month, it's a lot of time that they would have actually saved for them. And they get to actually focus on other work. I think that's also another thing. So when you look at in HR space, when you look at organizational effectiveness, it also talks to that, to say, how do we sort of look at the organization at the moment? How do we sort of re-engineer things? How do we sort of do things better? It's sort of looking at those things to say, okay, this is really routine. This is really manual. I mean, we can actually get a robot or do an automation for this. And then, you know, that robot can speak to people, and our agents can sort of come in from this time. And then that time that's get to be saved, it gets to be used elsewhere.
Definitely.
You know, that is to then, that is then to sort of improve that effectiveness, you know, with an organization.
Look at that, the MBA talking there, like effectiveness and efficiency and all this sort of stuff. But love it. Okay, we're out of time, but I want to get to this one or two questions. What's your relationship with money? How would you characterize it? Is it growing, toxic, it's nice, you enjoy it? Like, how would you characterize your relationship with money so far?
I would say my relationship could be better. It could be better. There are obviously, I mean, some few things that one has done in the past when it comes to, you know, usage of money that I'm not so proud of. I strongly believe that, you know, one has learned from that. I've taken some lessons with me, and ensuring that, you know, going into the future, I don't repeat the same similar mistakes. I mean, I can give you, for an example, you know, that thing of instant or self-gratification.
You know
when you've actually done well in something.
And then you're like, I need something for it.
I've been working very hard. Let me actually go and spend so much on this. Or let me go and get a new car or something
Yeah.
I guess, I mean, I've also made same similar, you know, mistakes in the past. And I mean, you've learned that, you know what, you can celebrate, but you don't have to actually go to that level. I mean, you can reward yourself, but you don't actually have to get to that level.
I'm
saying that, I mean, my relationship could be better. And I think it's probably getting better. It's growing.
Oh, nice. I mean, I know a few people who reward themselves with a Porsche. Like, I worked the whole year, so I must get a bit of a Porsche there, you know, at the end of the year. And I mean, it's a good thing. As long as it's controlled, right, you can maintain it. You know, it's not going to get you into financial problems. Just get your Porsche. But if it's going to affect you and your family, then maybe it's not a good reward, eh?
It's not a good reward.
You really don't want to put the family under pressure unnecessarily, because that would also not work. Okay.
What happens is that you are going to enjoy. I mean, it's a beautiful car.
It is.
You would feel good in it.
Yeah.
But you are going to enjoy it just for a few months or a few weeks.
Yeah.
And then after that, what comes is just a lot of regret. There will just be a lot of regret and say, hey, why did I go this route?
They'll give you first 4 weeks of a reprieve of sorts, but the next month when the debit orders start debiting, you're like, okay. Setting you back 14,000-15,000 a month or so. That's some crazy numbers there. Okay. Let's conclude by these ones there. I want to know, if you were to give advice to your younger self as you look back at the last couple of years from your childhood, what advice would you give to yourself?
So maybe one of the things, I just think it would have been great you know, if one had received, I think, some lessons around the usage of, you know, this resource called money. I think if one had actually got some lessons around that and teachings around that, maybe one would have actually been better in terms of using it now. But the advice that I would give to my younger self is to save money. I know this thing is said and overemphasized, you know, in a lot of, you know, places and corners. But that's very important. Save money, and on top of that, invest money. I think that's very important. I think if one had actually learned that earlier in life, maybe that would have actually made a difference in one's life. And also another thing is, you know, work within a budget. Ensure that, I mean, you sort of, ensure that, I mean, you live, you know, not even within your means, I just think, you know, below your means. That's what I think. I think if I had, you know, received those advices when I was young, I think maybe, you know, one's life would be different today. Right. I want to emphasize the issue of saving money. And also investing in money. And I mean, I'm also one person who agrees with, you know, all those financial advisors that say that financial literacy or teaching about personal finance, it should be something that is introduced in schools. And I'm not talking about high school here. I mean, even at elementary or early childhood. I mean, I think as soon as the kids are able to grasp and understand concepts, I mean, my 6-year-old, I mean, started understanding that, you know, that bank card that I have, that I present, you know, at stores, that, you know, there's money.
There's money in there.
You know, he knows that when that thing is not there, you're not going to get anything, you know. Yeah, and I guess, I mean, as early as probably 3, 4, as soon as they are able to understand and grasp concepts, we need to make them understand, you know, what is to spend, what is to save, what is to vest.
Yeah.
I think those concepts, they need to sort of understand them. I mean, and you know how it is. If you start at a very tender early age, they will be able to sort of grow up with all these things. And I mean, look at now the introduction of the two pots system.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to talk about that because I'm also in the HR space. Yes. I know about that.
Yeah.
Look at that, the introduction of the two pod system.
Mm.
I mean, you can see a lot of people, they want to sort of, you know, withdraw their savings. You know, and that money, as we all know, it's actually meant for retirement.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that money is supposed to be used now when you are not able to work, but people want to sort of take that money now. And one could say, you know, the maximum is 30,000 rand. Ah, that's not a lot. I can take that and then replace it. But when you sort of do the calculations, you know, over time, you actually realize that you are actually losing somehow.
Yeah.
You know, so it just says that, you know, a lot of us have not been taught, I think, about saving. It has not, we have not been taught about investing money, and I can tell you, I mean, other people that probably want to sort of withdraw their money, it's really in and around closing things that could have actually been avoided in terms of their spending, in terms of living within their means, and all that. So I think the long and short of it, I mean, is that, you know, if one had, you know, been taught the importance of saving and, you know, investing money, I think one would have actually been maybe different today.
Yeah, today. Lovely. Yeah. As we ended off, you've done quite a bit in this space, and, you know, fair bit of experience. Where do you see yourself, and what would be your last words of encouragement to our listeners?
Yeah, maybe five to 10 years from now. I obviously want to still continue learning.
Yeah.
Still want to continue keeping myself abreast with what's happening in this space. But one day I would like to see myself in the space, probably leading teams of professionals.
Sure.
In this space, And the other important thing is what I would want to see myself doing is obviously, I mean, impacting the different communities that we live in the country, you know, to ensure that, I mean, we give younger people, you know, opportunities so that, I mean, they don't sort of fall into the same pits or commit the same mistakes that that we've committed. So I think that's one of the things that I would want to do. And maybe my parting words is I think it's important that when there is something that you want to do or you want to achieve, do not delay, do not procrastinate. As the old saying says, procrastination is the thief of time.
Yeah.
So if there's something that you want to do now, you want to achieve now, don't say you'll do it tomorrow or next year or whenever. If you want to achieve that particular thing, start now. Don't delay in terms of, you know, doing whatever you want to do. And I guess, I mean, you know, now we live in a different time, a different age, where information is accessible almost everywhere. So if one needs information in anything, I mean, they can just go onto the internet and be able to access that information. So I think the other thing is it's important that let's ensure that we, I think, capacitate ourselves, equip ourselves with, you know, the information, especially in the spaces where we actually want to operate in or where we want to go to. Fantastic. I think those would be my parting words.
Thank you so much, my brother. May God continue to bless you. I think we'll chat to you again some other time as we catch up with you as well. But thank you for your time, your insights as well, and we wish you nothing but the best.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, my brother.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you so much. Of course, that was our elder there, Opudumpo, talking to us about his own career and where he's been as our shapeshifter for today. I really enjoyed that conversation, and I hope that you've taken for yourself a little bit of gems here and there.
Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money. We'll be right back.